Hello, good morning, and thank you for joining us. If you'd like to join us live, it's 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Our email address, we'd love to have emails as well, is dave@petsofinancial.net. We will get to some things I want to talk about in the next hour. And I want to talk about this as an interesting twist. We've talked before about, are you a trader or are you an owner of companies? And what I feel has become, a gambling issue for many people. And Robinhood plays to that. And I want to talk a little bit about that. That's not a bash of just a general bash of Robinhood, but think of all the video games and all the things that kids do, kind of setting up, winning tickets. Yay, if it falls in this, it's nothing different than gambling for kids. And are we doing that or creating that in the markets? It's always been a problem, but for a very tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of people that love to gamble, you know, like, throw a little bit away on this penny stock over here, try to hit a home run over there. Yeah, you know, you see it. You see it in all kinds of aspects of life, right? Where people are just trying to get rich quick. So we'll talk about that a little bit in the second hour. It's kind of something that's I've been thinking about a lot lately in a world of instant gratification. But right now, let's go ahead and go to the phones. And again, it's 580-KIDO. Let's go to Matt. Matt, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dave. I've talked to you in the past about real estate. Mm-hmm. And we just ended up selling all our real estate in California. And just as that ended and got the money in the account here, I was diagnosed with stage 4 colorectal cancer throughout my body.
Oh.
And so I have a couple of questions. I really appreciate everything you talk about. My question would be, if you have around $800,000 and your wife has to live on it, everything's paid for, her house is worth about $750,000, and we're totally debt-free. The question would be, I am a little more of a little bit of a game taker, not much, but a little more. And I have a brother who invests by himself a lot, and he does very well. He uses a Charles Schwab big fund that pays around 9% for part of his portfolio. My question to you would be, is that something that is too aggressive for someone, for my wife?
Yeah, the 9% draw rate is, if you're talking about that for the whole portfolio.
No, I'm talking, you know, a percentage. Obviously, you're...
I think that 5 would be the best number for a draw rate on the 800,000 of capital you have. It's a titch aggressive. First of all, Matt, I'm very sorry. It's obviously an incredibly difficult time for you. And so we're just going to talk numbers now and, you know, kind of ignore the fact that it's a kind of a big emotional thing, okay?
Yep.
800,000 is, if we're going to try to leave it intact, I'm assuming your spouse is in good health, correct?
Yes, very good health.
Okay. So basically when we're talking about mm-hmm. that, until you're over 80 years old, spending the principal is, in my mind, very dangerous. We're living a long, long time, and although this isn't sounding to be true in your case, medical technology is changing rapidly and life expectancies are going longer. So we have to basically say, let's make this money, this capital, actually grow to produce inflation-adjusted income into the future for an unknown number of years.
Right.
And so That's usually called the rule of 4%, and of course now everybody's talking about it being less. And I don't want to beat this into a big old discussion here, but you have to understand that in a zero interest rate world where you really can't own bonds to generate income in a portfolio when 10-year treasury is at 1%, that's not going to work. And so if you put 40% of a portfolio in a 1% bond, the only thing I can tell you about the future is I guarantee you'll run out of money if you take 4%. That's all I can say, because there's no way the 60% can keep up. So we have to do different things today. We have to look at REITs in a portfolio that don't have exactly the same movement, some movement with the market, but a little bit less, but they're generating around 5%. We have little pieces of this and that, that maybe real estate has trouble like it did in COVID, of course. So prices decline a little bit, but not as much as the market because they're not quite as aggressive. But they're not, it's not guaranteed. We can't find guarantees that are going to generate the kind of income that you want.
Yes.
So in this world, because it's zero interest. Now, when we start reaching for yield of something that says, hey, this pays 9%, the first thing we should ask ourselves is, how much risk am I taking to get 9%? Well, it sounds really good, and it's worked here and here, there. I said, no. I want to know the definition. What can go wrong? And if you don't know what that is, you need to run, not walk. It is a very dangerous amount of interest. Okay? You don't get 9 in a 1% world with just a little more risk. It's a lot more, and you need to know what that is. I'm not saying you can't accept that risk, that it wouldn't be a great investment, but you have to know what it is. And so therefore you don't chase yield is what we call it. You just can't chase after yield. And looking for high yielding things to put in a portfolio to draw income does not work. What we want to find is growth of income. And that might even be a Microsoft and an Apple added to a portfolio. Very low dividends, but they raise them greatly every year. And when you think of the rising cash flow of these companies, that's safer than something coming in high that can only be cut. Much safer, because they have rock-solid balance sheets. So I'm not saying you go out and buy Google, which pays nothing, but portfolios of growing streams of income coupled with higher income things, measuring the risk, knowing exactly what it is, how much downside we have, then you can balance that out, and you should be able to pull yourself somewhere in the area of 4-5% draw rate with cost of living adjustment. It's something we've been successful at. That's not me selling people on it. It's just me saying you just can't prove it. I can't prove the future. Nobody can. But I think it's somewhere in that 5% draw rate is the dead maximum. Anything less is being more conservative, and you cannot take cost of living increases, in my mind, if the market has a very bad year. Not a flat year, not a down a little year, a very bad year. I just think that's not what people do. You don't take more money out when times are tougher. Okay? So it is a very difficult situation. Matt, I know you want to try to get your wife set. I've walked this path with people before, and get her set up in investments. But things change over time, and you can do your best possible job. You can get your brother involved and all that. But there's going to be ongoing. And we never saw, 10 years ago that interest rates would go even lower, but they did. That you couldn't buy bonds in a portfolio when you grew up in a world that said, hey, you put 60% in stocks, 40% in bonds, and that'll work for you. It doesn't work right now. And when rates change and go higher or whatever, there needs to be an ability to see that and move with a changing world. And I don't mean anticipating change. I don't think it takes a rocket scientist or a mathematician to sit here and say, you can't in this world go out and buy a bunch of bonds and think that's going to work out and pull 4-5% out of your portfolio. That's just common sense. And yet that is what they taught for decades. And we still have investment companies out there preaching 60-40 portfolios with 4%. It takes a long time to make those changes. Yeah.
But with my wife, you wouldn't use bonds at all?
No, if you're in a high tax bracket, I do like municipal bonds right now. But
I'm in a low tax bracket.
Then the answer is really only within a portfolio for income, and I'm going to say it this way, coupled with income-generating stocks like utilities, REITs, they have notes, things like that. You can have some high-yield bonds in there. I leave that to the managers because they control billions. And with those billions, they can get in on initial offerings of bonds at better rates than taking it to the market. And they also are aware how companies are doing. So you and I go out and buy a bond and put it away for 10 years. How much ongoing analysis are we really doing to see if that company is really doing well and actually going to pay off its bond? The answer is none. And I don't care what firm it is. They don't. They just sell it and put it in a portfolio and it sits. We see more problems with bonds than anything. So within a fund, I have no problem using a fund to generate 5% plus in income and trust them with an allocation to whatever kind of bonds they want. Floating rates, high yield, high quality, whatever they see is best in the air within it, as long as it's not 100% bond fund. I don't really want to do that right now with rates.
So most of these bond funds, most of these funds taxable?
They would be in that circumstance, and certainly any of the higher interest rate ones by definition would be. Municipal bonds don't yield that much. Now, it doesn't mean that a person within their portfolio isn't going to have some short duration paper, meaning bonds, okay? Because the key with income planning is you're not generating all of the income you need. You need to have buckets of money, pockets, if you will. We call them reservoirs, not to be different. It just, that's what works for my mind. Reservoirs of money, so I know where the money's coming from in 3, 4, and 5 years. Because the assumption is the market's going to tank tomorrow and we need time to recover. Now, I'm not making a prediction on the market, but that's what you have to do because you can't be selling your stuff into a downturn. That's a death spiral. You have to have pockets, and it's hard, but you got to accept you're going to get 1 or 2% on that money. But you know, that's just the way it is for that little pocket of money. So the rest of it, you're trying to generate close to what you need, but you're not going to get there in a zero interest world. So you are going to have a little bit set aside that isn't fully earning as much.
Mm. The good thing is that I own a percentage of my son's company, and in about 2 years, it will pay off, and I'm hoping to get about 150 or 200 on top of that.
Well, that's good, too, and that will come in handy as well, you know, particularly if there's a downturn, because then you can allocate those assets into a downturn, which means what? You're going to generate more income because prices are better.
So you're saying you like pretty much majority of mutual funds.
No. It would be, in a perfect world, if I'm just going to tell you, an income portfolio looks like some income-paying stocks. Why? Because they're cheap and easy to hold, and they're very tax efficient. Okay? I mean, they are. Mm-hmm. They don't generate any capital gains. So our exchange-traded funds, so when we can find dividend growth-focused funds, we like those as well. And they have tremendous tax advantages as well. So ETFs, along with stocks, it keeps the overall cost of management very, very, very low. Well, zero in the case of stocks. And also, they're free to buy and sell these days. You don't even pay a commission to Schwab or TD Ameritrade or whatever to own them. So you can do that. And with high-quality companies like Pfizer, I'm not trying to sell you on Pfizer. I'm just saying that yields almost 4%. You know, I can't get that in a bond. But they've only raised their dividend like 40 years in a row. That sounds exactly like what we want, is a good yield that the company over time has raised it more than the rate of inflation. That's kind of what we're trying to do for income, is to raise it faster than inflation. But at any rate, that's the kind of that, and along with some funds that generate tremendous amounts of cash flow, things that we can't do, that's what we want. Not we, but any of us really can do. If you're not managing $80 billion and have all these contacts around the world, you just can't do it effectively.
So if I came into your office, how soon can I get in?
I don't know how to say this except just to say it. Under the circumstances, you can get in this week.
Okay.
I mean, we're not brain dead. Or heartless.
I'm about brain dead.
Matt, God
okay,
bless you.
Okay, Dave. I've listened to you for 4 or 5 years. I think the world of you. I will probably make an appointment.
Matt, God bless, and thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Take care.
Have a good day.
You too. All right. Kevin, give me a countdown. I think we're going to run out of time to even take a commercial break, aren't we? So tell me tell me when you get a chance. Okay. Oh, we are going to break right now. All right. We're out. All right. Money Matters will continue. Part two, hour number two upcoming. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. Let's talk about gambling in the next hour. We'll be right back. Good morning, and thank you for joining us. Hour number two of Money Matters is upcoming. And, of course, these are my opinions and my opinions only. And if we mention a stock, a sector, what have you, it has nothing to do with whether you should buy, or sell. And I know I say that all the time, but it's important that we remind ourselves that that is true. That is true. You know, before we get into me talking about gambling in the markets, it's interesting. Matt's call is, thank you for calling, Matt, because it kind of helps all of us, I think, from time to time to just go, wow, these are big decisions in life. Can be. But being worked up day to day about money, life is brief, and it reminds us of that. And I appreciate the reminder too. So once again, God bless. Tough deal. We can't be worried so much about day to day politics, the news, what Joe Biden's going to do to you, and not actually stop and count our blessings as well. Living in a complete atmosphere of fear, anger, even hatred is nowhere to be and no way to make good financial decisions. It is not. Every single day, I have in front of me the Wall Street Journal, the only, in my humble opinion, all right, when it comes to this, not so humble, the only source of news. Most certainly financial, but I believe political and everything else, because they don't just cover finance. Oh, they cover economic mostly, so I'm not going to be knowing much about things just out there in some weird regulation that doesn't affect us in a financial way through the Wall Street Journal. You're going to have to learn that in other sources. But every single day within this great, great paper, every day there are articles about how valuations are too high. You shouldn't be doing this. Can't be doing that. My gosh, so-and-so says the market's too high. Every single day. But as humans, we have the opportunity, the option to put in our head what we want, what we need. And by and large, we don't do a good job of that. We our eyes are drawn to bad news. And so once in a while, it's just good to have that wake-up call that life is sweet. It is really sweet. okay, bittersweet, whatever the poets want to call it too at times, absolutely. But it's sweet. And we need to recognize that in the midst of our horrible feelings about how our world is upside down. It can never get better. Joe Biden, the president, are you kidding me? How could this happen? How could Georgia go blue? This doesn't make any sense. How can the press be 100% in bed with whatever? How can they cover up this, that, the other thing? I get it. It doesn't feel right. Makes me angry too. But we can choose to dwell there, or we can also choose to see interest rates at the lowest levels of our lifetime, meaning opportunities for people to borrow money and get started at low rates, making it more likely they're successful. People can buy a home. They can improve their homes. They can improve their lives. The abundance of this world is clear, but not if you're not looking. It is not. Whatever you look for, you will see. It's true of all of us. It's not all sunshine and roses. That's not what I'm saying. But the idea that the world can't ever be good again is wrong. It's always been historically wrong. That we can't make money, or that we need to hide, that this is going to be so bad. I know. I feel it every day. I hear it from clients. This can't be right. It can't be right that the market's going up. Shouldn't we be fill in the blank? What kind of hedge? What if it goes down this much? What do we do? I heard about these stop loss things. What do you do? And we talked about stop losses. I won't go there right now. We talked about it a couple weeks ago, why they don't work. It all sounds good. And it pushes us into products of fear. Well, this is guaranteed. This doesn't go down. You never lose. Buy gold. Dave, what do you think about cryptocurrency? Since we're printing so much money, what do you think about it? Okay, we're going to do... I'm trying to get more and more and more information. It still makes my head spin. We were just on a conference call about cryptocurrency just actually with Thursday. We'll talk about that sometimes. We're going to put together a Zoom meeting about it, which will be available on YouTube to everybody soon. Not from me, from actual cryptocurrency experts, which is not really currency, by the way. Okay? It's not. Not a currency at all. So as we think about all these things, you have to understand, where is that coming from? Where is that coming from? Fear. Downright, out and out. They're going to take our guns away. They're going to tax this. They're going to get rid of that. Yes, a lot of that is true. Biden is already in a couple of days... gone to war on energy. Now, it's going to be hidden mostly behind regulation. It is. Mostly behind regulation. He's not going to come out openly and just ban fracking. That will guarantee that the House becomes Republican in 22. In my opinion. But just banning it, or having the permits re-looked at, you know, deferring the permitting process, even on private land, works. Killing approximately 80,000 high-paying jobs on the pipeline should be an indication, Keystone Pipeline, of where we're going in energy. I'm not saying it's good. He certainly has the power to do a lot of damage and is already starting on that. Not just my opinion. Those costs are going to go up. Does that mean you can't own Exxon or Chevron? No, it doesn't. Stocks reflect all known and assumed information. It also means the market isn't just energy. It's many things, which is why markets work and always have. We have to trust the process. It's served us well for hundreds of years. It's served the world well. If it feels broken, yeah, maybe it is. But I don't believe permanently. And most of all, you can't govern your investments with emotion. And once again, we shouldn't be governing our life that way either. We shouldn't just see the cup half empty all the time, the way the papers want you to, the way the attention grabbers, whether it's TV, radio, internet. It's dark. It's really dark out there. And you have to look for the light. You have to at least let it in. It's there. It's there right in front of us. But you have to look for it. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Bruce, thank you for waiting. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi, Dave. I just wanted to call you and tell you I'm one of those unsophisticated investors and listened to you for years and kind of followed your advice. You know, I'm just going over IRA that I've invested in for a long time, just put the money in it and forgot it was there. The last 8 years, it's, you know, 13% annual return.
Wow.
And a couple of those years were down years, so you actually lost. But even clear back in 2008, you know, things went down, but didn't worry about it and just hung in there. I listened to these advertisements and things of these safer money people and all that, and it's just really too bad. I just appreciate the advice you give, and like I say, I've never called in before, but I've listened and kind of tried to follow that when I've had extra money, and to me, it just really paid off, and there hasn't been a worry. I just put it there and forget about it.
Good for you. I thank you for that. That warms my heart. It really does. I see you're from Oregon, so are you going to secede from the communist state of Oregon? Or I assume you're
I would love to if enough people would go along with it. It's really bad, but again, you're kind of stuck where you are sometimes, and there's sure a lot of people moving to Idaho from all over because of the craziness that's going on in these coastal western states.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I know. Couldn't believe we were up at Bogus Basin yesterday skiing, and literally, all the cars around us had California plates. I couldn't believe it. I thought that was a bit bold to keep your plates there, but they're moving here.
If you want to see all the Idaho plates, just come to all the marijuana shops in Ontario, and that's 95% all the Idaho people coming over and spending their money on the dope.
I'm 100% sure that's true. Yep, absolutely. The Statesman actually did an article on that years ago when it was, what's the town up north there?
Huntington.
Huntington, that's it. Yep, because they didn't have them in Ontario, so.
Yep. So anyway, thanks for your show. And like I say, I'm sure there's a lot of us out here listening that, you know, and then an hour or so later, these safer money people come on and all that. And it's just almost criminal what people are trying to do when it really doesn't have to be hard and complicated. You don't have to be, you know, brain surgeon or anything. It just put it there and forget about it. As long as you're in a good, decent fund, it seems like. You know, I've got an advisor that I trust, and that just put it there and talk to him once in a while, and that's it.
Yeah. You know, Bruce, you have the right temperament too. It's I can tell. You know, it's just one of those things. You let things be and let them work out, and it's just and they have. But letting go of that burden is what I mean. You know, there is a burden of trying to figure out what markets are going to do and things like that. And when you really get investing, that it's not that hard. I mean, you just nailed it. It doesn't take anything at all. You don't have to be sophisticated at all to do very well in the market by simply buying and leaving it alone.
Right. There's plenty of other things to worry about and deal with that are real. Not having to worry about that aspect of it is pretty nice.
Yeah, we had a call the last hour, as you know.
Yes. yes, I heard him, and sad situation, and any of us can be that way tomorrow. We just never know.
Right, right. Exactly, exactly.
So,
Bruce,
well, thanks,
God bless you. Thank you. Thanks for listening.
You bet.
A good day. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We got to take a quick break, and when we come back, let's talk about gambling. And hopefully, let's just see where this show goes today. It's not gone anywhere I knew of until, well, we'll see. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome. Thank you for joining us. Gosh, I love the old music. I really do. Man, it was good. Really good. All right, let's go to the phones. Our number, by the way, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. If you prefer email, and thank you for joining us. Bob, go ahead, please.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
I have a question about a couple of dividend funds. I'm curious about why, if they're considered a large cap blend, and they're at zero or a little bit minus, and they have similar stocks compared to the index 500, which is up a couple, why would those dividend appreciation or dividend growth funds be less than the 500? I don't understand that.
You mean the price performance?
Yes.
And like since the beginning of the year, is that what you mean? Or
yes, beginning of the year.
How'd they do over last year? I mean, comparatively to the S&P, you can always pick bad stocks, but over a short period, we're talking about less than a month here, or are you talking a trailing 1 year?
It was like 12% or so.
Last year?
Yeah.
So it was still a little bit below the S&P then?
Yes.
Okay. So probably, they are more have a value bend. Last year and for several years now, the stocks of the S&P 500, and this is the beauty of a broad investment, something that's more of a blend or even the S&P itself as an investment vehicle, has performed very well because the growth side has been the winner. And this makes sense, of course. The whole FANG stock thing, right? Facebook and Amazon and Apple and all on, right? Okay, they are killing it. And the NASDAQ was up 43% last year as a reflection of what tech did. Well, tech is the largest sector within the S&P 500, driving it up. And on the other hand, you had energy stocks continuing to be terrible. You had, so any energy that's held in that portfolio is going to be a big drag on the returns. So some of those blended ones, you just have to kind of try to understand, maybe looking at the fund, are they in more of a value tilt than they are a growth tilt, even though they're in the blend category? Because as you can see, let's take, if you think of it in three boxes, right? You have pure value, blend, growth, right? Okay.
Right.
Well, you can imagine that within that middle box, you can lean way to the value side without quite being all value, or way to the growth side without being really growth. And you can imagine in a world where value or growth is outperforming, how people within that same category can have pretty different results. And as you well pointed out, that the blend is really what the S&P is. It's an exact dead middle of that blend. Two things. It doesn't mean that the managers are picking the right stocks, obviously, even if they're exactly right in the middle. But if they're leaning towards value rather or trying to get more dividends for you, that is going to be a value bend. And if that's what you're looking at as a dividend grower, they by definition are going to be far to the left, meaning the value side of that, of the middle of that. So underperformance in a growth environment like we had last year is going to be very natural. So I'm not sure I would look at that as a, I always like to think of it as a full cycle, meaning growth, value, up markets, down markets. How does that team do? And if your objective is to have increasing dividends, then the question is, are they doing that over the past long period. Not 1 year, but long period. Is that what they're doing? Because, Bob, that's what your objective is. It's not to beat the S&P. It's to do or beat what that index is trying to do, meaning rising dividend is not Google. It's not going to be owned. It's not Amazon. So you have a rising dividend. It might have some Apple in there because they do pay a dividend. It might have Microsoft because they do pay a dividend. So a rising dividend would focus on those, but it would you'd lose the Facebook, Netflix, Priceline, all those companies that just rocketed higher. Okay? Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah. So without the want to do micromanaging, because that doesn't really get you anywhere, well, how much faith or trust do you have in Morningstar ratings? I mean, if they say, hey, this is a gold and this is a five star, it's just you're just in a cycle and you have to just go with it?
No, I don't. I don't. Okay. If you know what, if you don't want to touch it, then just trust it. But we need to do more than that on our end for homework, right? You know what I'm saying? From an advisory perspective, their rating system isn't great. It's better than zero, okay? But but five-star funds don't beat three-star funds. They just don't. They don't. In fact, sometimes one-star funds beat five-star funds. Sometimes one-star funds are always one-star funds. You know, you just have to be cautious. Are you in a cyclical environment? I remember one of our very best holdings, literally two of them actually, were one-star funds when we bought them because they were so out of favor that the areas they were in, okay? They were very shortly became five-star funds, and that was probably a good time to sell because they are cyclical, and nobody stays hot forever, right? So being a great manager is fun. You can puff out your chest. You got the hot chick on your arm, and you know you're making millions of dollars, okay? But all of a sudden, your style, whether it's, well, we believe in following cash flow analysis, and we believe in earnings this or that or whatever. Our solutions are thorough. We thoroughly analyze the companies. We love visiting. It doesn't matter who you are, whatever it is, it's going to be your turn to be cold and your turn to be hot. And we just have to watch for that. And that's, unfortunately, that's kind of a chasing thing of the five-star thing, right? So, we're five-star fun. Well, good for you. Now you've sold lots of stuff. I've seen it. I know money managers. They puff their chest out, and their salespeople can't wait to run and flood the advisors' offices around the country with their five-star rating. It's 3 years. That's it. But we're there. And money comes in. It does every time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So be careful, if you want to go a little deeper, but look longer cycle. At least make sure that we're talking about five-star funds over a 10-year period.
Okay. And can you sometime, an educational segment, go through ETFs? I still think maybe for a lot of us it's kind of a mystery. What's good about them, what's bad about them, how to get into them, just some education on ETFs.
Okay, we'll do it. We have done it, and but you know what? I think it probably is time to crank up our education segment again and just run through everything again. ETFs are complicated, and they're ever-changing, so it's a good idea. Yeah. Thank you very much for that.
I appreciate your time. Thank you,
Bob. Thanks for the call. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We do need a Fox break now, Fox News break. And so, Clyde, would you please hang on? And we do have all the other lines available if you want to ring in. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Let's go to the phones. Clyde, how are you today?
I'm great, thanks. I'm excited to be on your show.
Well, I'm excited to have you, so thank you for doing that.
Well, first of all, I heard my friend Bruce on the phone, and I decided I would call as well. Huh. I think that your philosophy of invest and hold and in index type of mutual funds is an excellent philosophy. It's worked well over the last 15 or 20 years, and I would much prefer that to a safe, quote-unquote, safe investment that's guaranteed to not lose money and also guaranteed to not keep up with inflation.
Mm-hmm. Very well said. That it does have that dual guarantee. You're right.
Yes. you mentioned you were going to talk about gambling, and that's kind of what set me off and made me decide to call. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to express my opinion about the irony of people being told that they're unsafe or irresponsible and likely to catch a disease if they don't wear a mask. Yet they're also told on the same radio shows and commercials that it's probably a good idea to buy a lottery ticket, and that lottery tickets are pushed and promoted, and that kind of gambling is actually probably scientifically proven to be bad for your financial health. We can go ahead and advocate for buying lottery tickets, which is scientifically proven to be harmful. But if someone decides not to wear a mask because they're leery of the quote-unquote science behind wearing a mask, then they're considered evil or unkind.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I certainly have on the financial side argued for years about the lottery. I find it incredibly offensive that the government is behind that. They regulate casinos can't take on any game they have as much of a percentage as the lottery does. I always
what
found
percentage
that
does the lottery take?
50%.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Over half the money Dave Ramsey said the lottery is a tax on stupid, and I think that's too harsh. And so he actually now states it differently, something like the lottery is a tax on
the mathematically challenged, right? I think I've heard that.
Something along those lines, yes, because yeah. It doesn't make sense. And I find it sad because instead of taking real money and spending it on education of how the capital markets work, what capitalism is, how blessed we are as a nation, how a free capitalist market has freed more people from poverty than anything else nothing else does. So it's the beacon of the world, and we don't even teach it. And we don't teach that a cup of coffee a day over 40 years is $1 million.
Right.
I mean, a cup of coffee a day. Who doesn't have that?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you can't go buy a cup of coffee. It says that every human being in this day and age can do absolutely nothing except put a little bit of money away in a capitalist free market and walk away a millionaire before they're retired.
Dave, imagine this. Imagine if every working individual put 7 to 15% of their salary in the market.
Yeah.
They would retire multimillionaires.
Correct. Correct.
I mean,
we don't teach that
if the government wasn't
at 15
that
years old, you should do it. Yeah, I'm sorry. I get wound up about this, obviously, because it is so easy. You do not have to be a financial guru to be rich. Now, if rich means you have to have $1 billion, or rich means you have more than somebody else, I'm sorry. I don't know how to help you with the contentment issue. I can't. Okay, that's you need some more prayer to handle that. We all have that problem. Don't misunderstand me. We all do.
Right.
But the point is that it's a great starting place, and some people will not see it as rich because somebody else has a private jet. That's unfortunate of the way human beings are. But the point is we can all get there in such an easy manner. Doesn't matter what you do, whether you are a plumber, a drywaller, anybody with any reasonable amount of skills. I mean, any skills, okay? And I'm not saying plumbers are. That's skilled. That's don't misunderstand
right.
what I'm saying. I'm saying that everybody with a year of training in a world as abundant as this is can go out and make a decent living and put a couple bucks away and actually retire with millions. And that is the story that's never told.
Exactly. Why don't we have a PSA about putting your money away instead of buying a lottery ticket? Why don't we have a PSA about not going to Ontario and buying dope and getting a real job, or why don't we have a PSA that would really help people rather than a PSA about the giraffes that are passing away or that are going on the endangered species list,
or a
publicly funded commercial encouraging people to gamble. Some of those, the PSAs, and I know that with the change of the administration, we're going to hear more and more. I remember back from the Obama years and the Clinton years even, the PSAs that gave us ridiculous advice about hiring people in the office or not finding someone qualified in the office. And you might remember Rush Limbaugh had the little spoof on that. And he talked about someone in the office that drove a Bronco, someone in the office that kept a Bible on their desk, and someone in the office that was a member of the NRA, and none of them could be promoted, which is the true discrimination that happens. But anyway.
Yeah, it is. And it's it is. Our world is upside down.
It is. But people like you help guide us and have good advice, and I appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate your call, Clyde, and thank you for chiming in. And you have a great rest of the day, okay?
Okay. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for your call.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. Before we go to a break, I want to mention this too. If there's anything that you want to catch again, I believe Kevin has those uploaded to us, which is then downloaded to something else and yada yada. It's on our website, or it's at a podcast, Apple Store or whatever, under Petso Financial. They are available there, as well as we on our website. We have articles and calculators to help you with your financial planning. Also, if you need to contact us, that's a great place to start. We would love to hear how we can improve this radio show and, well, anything, right? But I like the idea, for example, that we had earlier about getting back to some of our education. Let us know what you'd like to talk about. All right, we got to get to take a quick break. Terry, you're on the other side, and it's 580-KIDO. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. In an upside-down world, it's still a beautiful day out there, even if you look at it upside down. It's kind of pretty. And if you notice, the day's getting longer. I have a little bit. So this is, I got to tell you, this is one of those funny things where it's like, oh, it's only a couple minutes a day, you know, that the sun comes up a minute or 2 minutes, you know, from the solstice, or goes down earlier from the summer solstice, right? So, but it's interesting when you think about that, right? Over a couple week period, and now a month. But if a minute a day on each end, right? Sun up a little bit earlier, sun down a little later, minute to two, is 30 minutes every couple of weeks or more. It really adds up. So anyway, here we are. We're heading out. It gets getting nicer outside, and it looks like a real bluebird day. I hope you get out and enjoy it today. I know. It's hard. Turn the TV off. You'll be happier, I promise. I promise. Call your grandkids. It works. All right. 580-KIDO. Terry, are you there?
Yes, sir, Professor.
Good to talk with you, Terry. How you doing today?
As good as could be expected. I haven't assumed room temperature yet, so.
Outstanding. That's good. I assumed you hadn't, or you and I both have, we're talking.
That going back to your first hour and that fellow with his, you know, the cancer, I just wanted to, well, first off, prayers to him and hope everything comes out as good as could be expected. But to put in a recommendation first off, kudos to the VA for doing as good as they did 13 years ago when they found my tumor.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, you know, cancer free since then. But anybody that's in that category where a doctor says, go ahead and get a colonoscopy, by God, take that recommendation.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's how you stop the stage 4 from happening. So, I did, again, thank you to the VA for bugging myself and putting me through the indignity of it all, but still alive and kicking and giving away money.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. I like it. I like it. Yeah, and that's good. I like that, too. That's and his name was Matt.
Matt, yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. But one question I did have with all the economics, you know, coming back with the injections and all and getting everybody vaccinated, when the economy comes back, is it a good time to lean toward the small caps, the Russell, and...
Yeah. Terry, it is. And you're seeing that in the market. I'm sure you've noticed that the Russell is on fire.
Yeah.
It was lagging for several years, and it's now doing better than the large indices by a pretty substantial amount. And that is in anticipation of the higher risk areas of the market coming back, because those are the areas, if you will, and I say higher risk in the sense that they haven't been making money in the shutdown. They're economically sensitive. They're sensitive to people maybe not traveling could be part of them, maybe not going to restaurants for others. But the small cap universe, either way, is a big benefactor of a more leveraged or riskier play, which is to say, I want to go down in market cap. I know the balance sheets aren't as robust. They don't have billions of dollars, $100 billion like Apple does. I'm going down down to a lower level. That is, and I don't mean lower level like you can't find high-quality small-cap names, but they just don't have the balance sheets, right?
Right, and the flexibility. I'm trying to think in my pea brain about balancing the crony capitalism that all the big companies get.
Bam, that is it. I was just going to say that, okay. So I'm going to jump all over that, Terry. That is the concern going forward when you have an administration that wants to take over everything. And I know people will roll their eyes at that comment, but that is absolutely, historically, this is the same people that were in the Obama administration. It's exactly what they did there. No energy, no fracking, no this, no that, tax this, tax that, and let's put Obamacare on everybody. What does that mean? It means the big companies can handle it. They can hire lobbyists to get around the regulations or get laws out there. Or if they just simply have to file more papers around, which is what happens, right? I mean, every year, literally, one of the things that I do, and I don't want to dive into the weeds here, tax-wise, my accountant has to send a literal box of documents. I mean, I'm not joking. I'm not talking about a little tiny Amazon box. I'm talking about a shipping box of hundreds and hundreds of pages, because they won't do it digitally. And the reason they won't do it digitally, or my accountant won't do it digitally, because this is exactly what happened this year. We never got your box of stuff because it's sitting in a warehouse and they don't have any idea where it is. But we have a delivery receipt that says you got it, so go pound sand. Now, that's how well the government works. But when you're a small business and you have to do that and hire attorneys and accountants to simply fill out forms that sit in a warehouse that are unimportant, but that makes the bureaucrats feel important, and I am not joking, this is how it works in many industries. There is no regulation except filling out paperwork, and they put it in a warehouse. You've checked the box of doing all your work. Now, what that means is you now have more friction cost, which is easily absorbed in a multi-trillion-dollar business, but it is not in a small business. It's
what do they call that, a rounding error?
Yes, exactly, in a large business, which makes big business love regulation because it drives small competitors out.
Right.
And people don't really understand that, that the big business is in the back pocket of government, and vice versa. Why do you think they like the Dems? It doesn't make sense. They're business people. Why do they actually like the Democrats? Because they regulate the crap out of their smaller competitors, and they can hire around it. It doesn't matter. It doesn't change their life, and they can look pretty and wonderful and hang out with Hollywood stars.
Yeah, and unless you're a pipe fitter for the union in North Dakota, but that shutting down the pipeline like he did, but it's the beauty of having living long enough to have a little perspective.
Yeah, it's true. It is. And also, but the perspective is also has to be toned with, and I know you share this too, I just feel like today's program has amplified that we have to actually go out and enjoy this upside down, crazy world, and we'll get through it together.
It goes with one of my bumper stickers, when life gives you lemons, throw them at someone.
Oh, gee, that's a little twist on one I thought I knew. All right, Terry, have a great day.
All right, thank you, Professor. Bye.
Take care, bye. All right. If you have any questions during the week, give us a call over at Petso Financial. Shoot us an email, what have you. And also, importantly, let us know what you like and don't like about what we're doing here. What do you want us to teach? Because that's what we'd like to do, honestly. So I will promise you, we will start up on our education segment again soon. And I will actually come back to this because I don't think it fits to be talking about treating investments on a long-term basis and not gambling with them. So I will talk more about this as well, because it obviously is something that hits me very sharply. Now, with that, I do want to wish all of you a very happy rest of the weekend. Please enjoy that beautiful sunshine out there. And we will survive this upside-down, insane world. We really will. We really will. Have a great day.